From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The largest survey to date of bereaved families is published today in the Journal of the American Medical Association. It reports the perceptions of family members about the quality of end-of-life care in America. Only half of families rated overall care in hospitals and nursing homes as excellent, while 70% said hospice care provided at home was excellent.
Today we have the story of one family's experience with hospice. It's a story of the death of a child. It takes us back to 2001, when a San Diego couple faced the death of their infant son, Adam, who had a fatal genetic disease. NPR's Michelle Trudeau talked with Adam's mother during the time of her son's illness, and also to the children's hospice team in San Diego who cared for the family. The family has asked that we not use their last name.
The home is comfortable and clean and very quiet, almost still. The white California sunlight streams through a large paneled window at the far end of the living room. Under the window, on the couch, propped up in a specially molded seat, is Adam. Beautiful, chubby, fair-haired, 2-year-old Adam. His blue eyes are open, but one eye is a cloudy gray, and his eyes don't track movement. Adam is now blind. And he's growing deaf, and he can no longer crawl or sit up or hold things in his hand or eat solid food, all things he once could do. But a genetic disease called Tay-Sachs is progressively attacking his central nervous system and has stripped Adam of the developmental milestones he once had achieved. Tay-Sachs is always fatal. Children usually don't live past their third birthday. Adam's mother, Bonnie, sits close to her boy, touching him. And on his other side is Susan Finkelstein, the lead nurse from the Children's Program of San Diego Hospice. Finkelstein skillfully, tenderly, takes Adam into her arms and begins examining him, patting him rhythmically and firmly on the back, checking that his lungs are clear. Bonnie describes the routine.
Susan, Adam's hospice nurse, is here, and she's doing his physical assessment, which she does every week when she visits. This is a seizure. Mm. He just thought he'd let you know what his life is like, I guess. But it's okay, sweetie.
On what Bonnie calls a good day, Adam will typically have 5 or 6 seizures. Okay, on a bad day, 15.
All done.
Susan Finkelstein holds Adam steady through his seizure. Her proficiency is evident.
I've been taking care of children who were terminally ill probably for all of my career, which is 22 years this week.
The children's program at San Diego Hospice and Palliative Care is one of the few in the country that specializes in helping terminally ill children and their families. Its staff reflects this focus. Pediatricians, child psychologists, family social workers, pediatric nurses like Susan Finkelstein, experts in end-of-life issues that dying children face.
Yeah, that's done. That's done.
Finkelstein says that Adam's disease is now robbing him of his ability to suck and to swallow, and that there will soon come a time when he can no longer ingest anything by mouth, at which point a feeding tube would be the only way he could get nourishment. Bonnie talks about this pivotal point.
We've made the decision not to put a feeding tube in Adam, which they told us from day one when they were describing Tay-Sachs to us, that would be one of the decisions we would have to make down the road, whether to put a feeding tube in him or not. So we've known this for a long time, spoken to a lot of other families about the issue.
Some families do opt for a feeding tube, hoping to gain a few more months of life for their babies. But Bonnie believes the quality of life for Adam would be too painful under those circumstances.
Putting a feeding tube in Adam is not going to change his prognosis. It may allow him to live a few more months, 6 more months maybe. But when the time comes that he would need a feeding tube, it will be the worst part of his disease, where he's having more seizures, where he's aspirating more. So if we put a feeding tube in him at that point, I believe that he'll just suffer more. I'm also trying to be realistic, and I'm not looking for miracles. And I just want him to be comfortable. And so I thought this was the way for us to go.
Thanks.
It's Wednesday, midday, the weekly case conference meeting of the children's hospice team, sitting around a table, files in front of them, coming together to discuss each family and the care of each terminally ill child.
Maybe we can start by talking about Bonnie and seeing where things are there.
David Sein, pediatrician and medical director of the children's hospice.
So Adam's condition continues to deteriorate, and we know, we've discussed before with Tay-Sachs, that the point will come where he's not going to be able to tolerate eating orally anymore at all. He won't be able to take anything by mouth.
They have made a decision that they don't want artificial feeding. They don't want feeding tubes of any kind.
Adam's nurse, Susan Finkelstein.
We need to just make sure that we go over it on an ongoing basis, because when it gets closer, they may change their mind.
She said to me on the last visit, I don't know what I'm going to do when I don't have Adam to hold and to talk to. She just wells up with tears when she asks, I don't know what I'm going to do.
This is Len Valancourt, the chaplain of the children's hospice team.
And she knows it's getting closer for Adam as far as the average lifespan for children with his illness. And but she's a powerful, powerful woman. I mean, the way she lives and has that baby. And there's going to be a big void in her life. And she knows that. So she's in that, what we call anticipatory grieving right now, and has been for quite a while.
That's also good information for me.
Julia Justice, the social worker on the team.
Every time I go out, I always revisit her understanding of what the feeding, and you know, that they both agree, mom and dad agree, that they don't want any artificial feeding. But it is difficult for them. They're the one who's going to be, you know, in pain, letting go of him.
Julia Justice goes to visit Bonnie a couple of times a week, or more if Bonnie needs her. Their closeness is exceptional. Through her, Bonnie can unburden some of the pain of watching her little boy die.
The main thing I think that Julia really helps me with is just dealing with my emotions on a very regular basis. And she's also helped a lot. We've already started planning for a long time now. I've been planning Adam's funeral, and she's been really supportive, and she went to the cemetery with me, and so
we actually went to the funeral home together, you know, picked up the casket and what she wants, what kind of service she wants. So I went to the mortuary with her.
I think I felt like I wanted to be ready if the time came. I didn't want to be in a panic, in a crisis situation, and have to make all of his funeral arrangements. I also felt like that was something that I had control over when I have no control over his disease. They were hard decisions, but I'm glad that we've made a lot of them already, and we can just spend more time focusing on being with Adam.
The children's hospice team helps with all the tangle of arrangements, like choosing a child's casket. Others on the team help with medical problems, like controlling a child's physical pain. But above all, says Liz Sumner, director of the children's hospice program, the team helps each family focus on the quality of living with their child for the precious time remaining.
So I think it's about helping them capture the opportunities that there are now, and help them focus more on the living that there is to do, and the living child, not the dying child. We're here to help you do as much living as you can and to find joy in your time together, as opposed to waiting for your child's death.
It's been real helpful to have everybody from hospice help us make that decision and support us in that decision, that we didn't want to put a feeding tube in Adam. And then just helping us to realize that we're making a very unselfish decision. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that's really stuck with us the most, that we got from hospice, was that we'll never be ready to let go, whether it's when the time comes and we don't put in a feeding tube and he dies, or we put in a feeding tube and 6 months later he dies. We're not going to be ready then either. But I think we're ready to say, when this disease takes away his ability to eat, that we're not going to, we'll be as ready as we'll ever be to let go. So.
No parent is ever ready for their child's death, but the Children's Hospice team gives parents emotional support to walk to the edge and look down. Pediatrician David Sein.
In general, at the point where he's not taking anything and we're not giving anything artificially, it's probably going to be like 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 2.5, 3 weeks that, you know, she understands that it's not going to be necessarily a matter of days and could be outwards to 3 weeks.
Yeah, we've talked about that, and she's asked a lot of questions. She's also done a lot of research.
Susan Finkelstein.
About what will happen and how long it will take for him to eventually get to the point where, because he doesn't have any nutrients going in, that his body will start wasting and his kidneys will start to fail.
Talking to parents about what is likely to happen to their child during the last days of life makes the events not less painful, but less frightening.
Susan and I have had conversations about, what do you want the last few days of Adam's life to be like? Discuss giving him more feed and keeping him as comfortable as possible. And I don't know how you do that without hospice. I really don't. And I think I don't really have that vision yet of the very end. It's just comforting to know that one phone call and we'll have all the support we need. I just know that it will be at home. Adam will be at home when the end comes. This is where he'll be. Adam will be at home.
Toward the end of August 2001, Adam gradually stopped eating altogether, unable to swallow. No feeding tube was given. And on August 28th, at age 2.5, Adam died, at home. He seemed very peaceful, Bonnie says, lying on his parents' bed, surrounded by his mother and father and grandparents, members of the Children's Hospice team nearby. Michelle Trudeau, NPR News.
Bonnie and her husband now have a second child, Jeremy, a healthy 2-year-old.